Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, how y'all doing? All right, let me get my shit situated here. I was rushing in order to finish in time and to get on air, so I can do my best to inform and entertain everybody. Got a trillion and one things to talk about today. The Republicans in Congress have lost their ever-loving minds. I don't know if they ever had them, but it got worse somehow, and I'll explain to you exactly how that is. On the issue of Planned Parenthood, on the issue of Obamacare, on the issue of gun reform, oh boy, it's ugly. As we move along here, I got updates on the situation, the terrorist attack in California. I think there's enough evidence to call it a terrorist attack at this point. All the details and all the specifics as to exactly what groups they're associated with, that might be a little more gray. There might be some more gray area there. But in terms of whether or not it is a terrorist attack, I think we can pound the gavel. I think you could say that with relative certainty. Also, as we move along, I got Rush Limbaugh knows exactly who to blame for the terrorism in San Bernardino. And the answer is the same people that he's blamed for everything else ever. So I don't even need to say it for you. You know exactly what it is. I have some devastating stories from the U.S. bombing of the hospital in Kunduz. Foreignpolicy.com released a picture yesterday that, I mean, I don't know, just... it really broke my heart to see it, and it's something that I'm going to share with you guys here. And don't worry, later on in the show, we got some lighter news and even some good news. We have good news on the John Stewart front, can we say? Or I worded that weirdly. Let me see. How can I put this? John Stewart did something yet again for the American people, which is fucking tremendous, and he deserves a lot of credit for it. And Ben Carson perhaps doesn't know what the fuck Hamas is, but that, I don't know, it's up in the air. We're gonna dive into it, and you're gonna tell me what you guys think. So there's many different angles to that. I think some people might be taking it too far. With Ben Carson does have a tremendous lack of foreign policy knowledge, but is it as bad as some of the headlines today? 50-50. So we'll discuss that. All right, let's get started. I'm gonna give you guys the updates in a little bit here. For the San Bernardino terrorism situation. But first, let me kick it off with what was happening in Washington yesterday. All right. If you thought the Republican Party couldn't get any more despicable, listen to this. According to the International Business Times, quote, the Senate voted 52-48 to defund Planned Parenthood just days after a deadly attack occurred at a Planned Parenthood location in Colorado. The vote came down to the wire with 52 senators voting against providing funding and 48 senators voting to fund the organization. To give you guys more specifics here, 41% of Planned Parenthood's funding comes from the government. 97% of their services are, of course, not abortion, and a grand total of zero tax dollars goes towards abortion. There's a federal ban on any tax money going towards abortion. But why let facts get in the way of their narrative and their anti-Planned Parenthood jihad, I think we can call it? Guys, stop and think about this. There was just a fucking terror attack at a Planned Parenthood where a guy kill people in a Planned Parenthood, said no more baby parts. He's described as extremely conservative, extremely Christian. He said that he thought he can get away with anything because of his faith. All he had to do was say, God, will you forgive me? And then, boom, immediately forgiven. And this is just a few days after it. If this is standing in solidarity, this is the worst way you could ever possibly do it, but that's the point. They didn't skip a beat in their soulless demagoguery. Skip a beat. They went right back to, they're the bad guys. They're doing something wrong there. Defund them, even though none of the federal funds are going for abortion, which is the one thing that they object to. They minorly object to the other things there. But look at this. Can you imagine the Democrats did something equivalent to this? And I honestly don't even know what the fuck would be equivalent to this. But could you, okay, I mean, I guess take the situation that just happened in San Bernardino, where it looks like Muslim terrorists attacked and killed 14 people. And it was a place where, I don't think it was government funded, I think it was privately funded, but it was a place where people with disabilities got help. Imagine that was government funded, and these guys attacked there, and just days after, the Democrats proposed a bill to cut funding to this place that just was attacked. Everybody would say, what the fuck are you doing? That's not, like, in the realm of respectability. That's something that just makes you a bad person. Comes down to a fundamental misunderstanding as to what Planned Parenthood is, and even, to be honest, as to what abortion is. If you really believe that abortion is murder, abortion is genocide, when you do X, Y, and Z, you are murdering, killing, well, then naturally, yeah, you are going to respond like this. But that's not true, and that's the point. As we've spoken about time and time again, there's a reason why you don't call an abortion when, you know, that, let's say it's a 3 weeks into the development of the fetus, let's say. There's a reason why they don't call that murder, because it's fundamentally something different. Because, as you know, we've said, you can deal with, the further back you go, it becomes gametes and zygotes, and then there's a period where it's an embryo, and then it becomes a fetus, and then within the development of the fetus, there's a long time before there's the development of the nervous system in the fetus, which means it could feel pain, or viability, where it can actually live without the mother. So to try to pretend like this is a black and white issue, and that it's equivalent to murder, and that's the end of the conversation. It's that you're doing genocide. Well, that's intellectually disingenuous. You're either ignorant or stupid if you believe that. Now, I'm not saying there's not room for debate, and there's not an area on that spectrum where there's shades of gray, where reasonable people can disagree and say, hey, I draw the line here. You know, there's some smart people who are more conservative than me on this issue, and they draw the line earlier on. But one thing's for sure. You don't get to draw the line the second you're done having sex, because that doesn't make any goddamn sense. And to try to pretend like it's equivalent to murder and to demagogue all day long like that, and then attacks happen, and then after the attacks, which were done in part because that information was pumped into their brain, then you still try to attack the institution and defund it. You're just bad people. I don't know how else to put it. You're not responsible. You don't care about the effects of what you're doing. You don't care about the effects of your actions. This is not okay, man. Can you believe it? Of all the times they could have picked to start waging their anti-Planned Parenthood jihad, they pick now. It's unbelievable. I was dumbfounded last night. You would think that the Republicans have found a way to, you know, try to moderate themselves a little bit, at least to put on a kabuki theater show, at least to be like, hey, we're better people than you think. But no, they just let their balls hang out. Like, how do you like that? Do you like that? I'm attacking this institution which was just shot up in a terror incident, and I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit. I'm not going to stand in solidarity with them. I don't give a shit. We're going to defund them. And that's it. Of course, don't worry, because President Obama will veto it. But he shouldn't fucking have to. I think that's the point. I think that's the most important point here. Okay. Let me move along here. And go to some more crazy stuff. This next story is so absurd that it's like something out of a bad dream, or it's like The Onion wrote some sort of politics-based horror movie, and now we're watching it unfold in real life. So yesterday, one day after 14 people were viciously gunned down, Senate Republicans blocked gun reform. Stay classy. Let me tell you what the provisions were. Quote, blocking individuals on the terrorist watch list from purchasing guns, gun background checks, and increasing funding for mental health services and treatment for substance abuse disorders. So the most vanilla, moderate, how can anybody be opposed to this provisions ever, Republicans block it. But not only that, they proceeded on the same day to repeal Obamacare. They've tried this so many times that they lost count. Some news organizations say there were like 55 or 56 attempts before. Some now have the number as high as 60. I guess it depends on how you count it, if it's specific provisions or if it's the entire bill that you're trying to repeal. But let's say, you know, this is time number 58, 57, 58. And this one actually worked. It got through the Senate. It's almost certainly going to get through the House. Now, of course, don't worry because Obama's going to veto it. But take a second to digest the insanity that's happening in Washington. A day after 14 people are gunned down, a day after, the Democrats are like, this is crazy. Let's at least do these pieces of legislation, this gun reform, for starters here. Just a little bit, just a little bit. People on the terror watch list, sorry. You can't get guns. Ooh, crazy. You know, what a radical idea that is. Background checks. Mental health care funding. That's it, just that. Nope. Nope. The Republicans say no, they block it. And then they go on to repeal health care for millions of people. And think about the implications. Again, it's not going to get through because Obama is going to veto it. But think about the implications if that did get through. I mean, that would be so people who are 26 years old and younger, they would be kicked off of their parents' health insurance rolls. Obamacare made it so that you can stay on until you're 26. Pre-existing conditions would come back. You would make it so that insurance companies, because of Obamacare, they have to spend at least 80% of their money that they take in on actual health care. Before Obamacare, it was crazy. It was the wild, wild west. There was no regulation. A lot of insurance companies ended up spending 50% of their money on health care, the other 50% on overhead and paperwork and all types of nonsense. Obamacare said, no, you actually have to put that towards helping the people who are paying into your company. So it would go back to that. I mean, it would absolutely destroy. Now Obamacare is an integral part of the system. If you pull the rug out from underneath it, it'd be fucking chaos. I mean, forget it. For example, I would probably lose my health care because, you know, I go on the exchanges. And, you know, you shop on the exchange and you get to see the price comparisons one next to the other. And for a lot of people, man, a lot of people get subsidies. And beforehand, they simply couldn't afford health insurance. And now, with the subsidies, they can barely afford health insurance. And that would just be gone. So you'd have, they estimate between 16 and 20 million people, boom, uninsured overnight. Overnight. Medicaid expansion, gone. Just gone. Think about how fucking crazy that is. There was a Harvard study, which found that thousands of people die in the red states that refuse to accept the Medicaid expansion under Obamacare. They die because they don't have access to health insurance and health care. So they decided to say no. They didn't want to sign on to it because, oh, big bad Obama, and people are dying as a result of that. And now they want to do that in the rest of the country. They want to do that. They want to sentence people to die in the rest of the country because they don't have health insurance, they don't have health care. They want to rip the rug out from underneath the Medicaid expansion. A day after 14 people were gunned down, when what looks now like terrorists bought guns legally, they say, no, we want to keep allowing people on the terror watch list to get guns, no background checks, no mental health funding, and, oh yeah, we're going to repeal your health care on top of that. They don't care about you. They're not working for you. I have many, many problems with the Democrats, but the Republicans are fucking psychopaths. They're insane. They're sociopaths. They don't give a shit about you. They don't even give a shit about the perception of what they're doing. Back in the day, you could be a ruthless, vicious, corrupt politician, but you at least try to do a song and dance for the people. Haha, I care about my constituents. No, I don't, but I'm going to try to make it look like I do. Now they're just saying, fuck you. Yeah, fuck you. If you're on the terror watch, go buy a gun. We don't care. I'm going to take your health care away, too, while I'm at it. We don't have a democracy anymore. We have an oligarchy. The Republicans are listening to the NRA and the gun manufacturers. They're certainly not listening to the American people. If you go provision by provision for Obamacare, the American people overwhelmingly support it. Overwhelmingly. On gun control. On the sane, moderate reforms, an overwhelming majority of the American people support it. They don't care. It's not about that. This is what you want to vote for, guys? You're crazy if you want to vote for this. Okay. Next. All right, now let me give you the update on the situation in San Bernardino. Evidence is beginning to emerge in the San Bernardino case, and it looks like terrorism. According to CNN, quote, federal authorities believe the female attacker in the San Bernardino mass shooting on Wednesday made a social media post pledging allegiance to ISIS as the violence was in progress. U.S. officials said 27-year-old Tashfeen Malik posted a message on her Facebook pledging allegiance to Islamic State leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. The message was made on an account with a different name. CNN had previously reported that it was believed Farouk communicated with terror suspects overseas. Officials say he became radicalized after marrying Malik in Saudi Arabia last year. The AFP goes on and they add to this, quote, Farouk had been in contact with known terror suspects overseas and had become radicalized after marrying Malik in Saudi Arabia. That is the exact same passage. Hold on, let me get to the right one here. I believe that's what we call a organization fail. Okay. The AFP adds, quote, the FBI, who were scouring cell phones and a computer hard drive of the couple, had evidence that Farouk had communicated with extremists domestically and abroad a few years ago. Quoting a senior federal government official, the Los Angeles Times said Farouk was in contact with a small number of suspected extremists, including one who was monitored for terrorism. The Daily Beast is describing the attack and how the events unfolded like this. The first thing they did was dropped off their infant with grandma. So they took their kid, who I think is 6 months old, to be with their grandma. Then they went to their work holiday party to kill all their coworkers, who threw them a baby shower. Think about that. These people threw them a baby shower. And then they go there and kill them. And then what they did is they left behind bombs to take out the first responders. But thankfully those malfunctioned, as we spoke about the other day. There were many of them. There were multiple pipe bombs. And here's some more evidence. Nicholas Thalassinos, who is one of the victims, posted about a man who contacted him, called the Jewish people criminals and cowards, and told him, you will die and never see Israel as a country. So this happened a day before the attack. This is somebody that one of the attackers knew, and they're saying perhaps this was like a warning sign where he contacted them, and he was ranting about the evil Jews in a purely anti-Semitic rant, and said, you'll die and never see Israel as a country and all that stuff. So, again, in my mind, I think it's clear enough at this point to say it is terrorism. Now, whether or not they actually had direct contact with ISIS or Al-Qaeda or any other official terror network, that's a different story. That's a much more gray picture. Some of the people they contacted overseas or even in the U.S., they may have been extremists, but not necessarily connected to one of those groups. So there's a gray area there, but in terms of what we call it, it's almost certainly terrorism. It's almost certainly done in the name, in this case, of fundamentalist Islam. So I want to respond in two ways to this. First, let's assume that they did the terrorism because of that last clue that we have here, where he may have posted or called his coworker and ranted about the evil Jews and stuff like that in Israel. So if he or they did terrorism because of that, well, Israel and the other list of grievances that usually go hand in hand with this when radical Islamists speak about this, like the Iraq sanctions, for example, which Bin Laden spoke about, where over a million Iraqi kids died, and the wars in the Middle East, and the U.S. bases in the Holy Land. Question. How would this solve your issues? Again, assuming that that's what they believed. And, you know, hey, we're mad about you haven't freed the Palestinian people, and you've been occupying our lands and killing our people and the war in Iraq and this and that. How would this solve your issues? It's obviously only going to lead to more of these things that you supposedly hate. It's going to lead to the U.S. being more militaristic. It's going to lead to more occupation. It's going to lead to more military bases. It's going to lead to more persecution against innocent Muslims, so that it wouldn't make any sense if those are your grievances. Now let's attack this from a different perspective here. What if that wasn't the case? What if they did it simply in the name of their religion and for ideological reasons, and it was simply jihad to kill infidels? Well, that would mean that according to them, they follow the Quran literally. Word for word, they're literalists, so the Quran is perfect to them. And I'm going to present the same argument I did the other day when we spoke about a similar story. If that's true, then how do you explain the contradictions in the Quran? So you're, I'm a Muslim crusader, and I'm going to kill the infidels for doing wrong to us, and I'm doing it because Allah commands me to. Well, in the Quran 7:54, it says Allah created the earth in 6 days, and then in 41 lines 9 to 12, the days add up to 8. So your perfect book is not so perfect. There's a contradiction right there. How about in 229, Allah created the earth and then the skies, and in 79, lines 27 to 30, he created the skies first and then the earth. At one part in the Quran, Allah uses water to create humans, and at another part, it says, no, not water, something like pottery. And then there's another part where it says Allah used blood clots to create humans. Which is it? Contradictions all over the place. More. At one point it says it takes 1,000 years to get to heaven, and at another point it says it takes 50,000 years. Your book is not perfect. It's intellectually embarrassing. At one point it says that Christians can get into heaven. At another point it says they can't get into heaven. At one point it says wine is the creation of Satan. At another point, it says that there are rivers of wine in heaven. Which is it? Which is it? No, the book is full of contradictions. It's full of contradictions. But the most important point here is, regardless of which case it was, if you're doing it because you're religious fanatics, or you're doing it because you're religious fanatics and you have those grievances about U.S. foreign policy or whatever it is, guys, the people who worked in the buildings, how can anybody attack them? They have nothing to do with any of those things. They're innocent civilians. I mean, why is killing them any more moral than the U.S. killing civilians overseas? Which, again, might be one of the things that they cite as, oh, that's big bad America. They're so bad that they kill our civilians. They kill Muslims all the time. And you're better by killing innocent Americans? No, that makes you horrific. That makes you a terrorist. That makes you bad people. No, it's this kind of thinking which is profoundly dangerous. The idea that we're the good guys by definition, they're the bad guys by definition. Ah, you're an American? Guilty enough. Start killing them. Unreal, man. You have to rid yourself of any dogmatic tribal ideology, any fundamentalist religious interpretation that's going to lead you to justify or rationalize doing the most immoral things. And that's what I can never wrap my mind around, is that all the different terrorists, whether you're talking about a Muslim terrorist in this case, or Christian terrorists, or right-wing terrorists, or it's just state-sponsored terrorism and it's secular terrorism, guys, they're always convinced that they're the ones who are the most moral. So it's not even like in a gray area for them. Like, yeah, maybe there are upsides and downsides to this. Should we go about it this way? No, they think they're, you know, we are the moral ones. We are the virtuous ones. We're standing up for principles, and we're, you know, we're the right people. Time somebody wholly believes that, they usually end up acting so wrong. Whenever you're so convinced you're right with utter certainty, oftentimes those are the most wrong people. You don't think Hitler woke up in the morning and thought, you got it, big guy. He absolutely did. He absolutely did. He thought the Germanic people have been oppressed and put down for so long that it's justified for us to stand up against the people holding us back, the evil Jew bankers who rigged our economy. You know, the everybody else who took part in the Versailles Treaty, who put us massively in debt and made it so that generations of Germans could not have any hope whatsoever. So we are justified in our doing of the Holocaust and our gassing people and our killing of gypsies and homosexuals and Jews and everybody under the sun. No, it is wrong. It is grotesque. It is immoral. You do not kill civilians under any circumstance. You're not the good guy if you do that. You're the bad guy if you do that. All right. Now, I'm going to have to take a break here real quick, and then when we come back, we'll get into Fox and Friends and their grotesque response to this, and Rush Limbaugh knows who to blame for the terrorism in San Bernardino, and it's the same group of people he blames for everything else ever. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. Hi, son of a bitch. We're back. And Fox and Friends is going to give a serious reaction to the San Bernardino terrorism. All right, let's do it. Fox and Friends is going to do perhaps their most pathetic segment ever in response to the San Bernardino terrorist attack. Let's watch.
On the cover of the Daily News, they have politicized this already. Hey, Republicans are saying, God isn't fixing this. As the latest batch of innocent Americans are left dying in pools of blood, cowards, who they picture right here, Rand Paul, Paul Ryan, Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, oh, all Republicans, cowards who could truly end gun scourge continue to hide behind meaningless platitudes.
You know, I was so disturbed by that cover, and but when you see tweets like Chris Murphy out of Connecticut saying your thoughts should be about steps to take this carnage, your prayer should be for forgiveness if you do nothing again, and then a tweet from the editor of Think Progress, like Zach Ford, saying, try this, stop thinking, stop praying, look up Einstein's definition of insanity, stop acting on gun violence prevention measures. You know
what? Now listen to this. Here's a father who was getting a text from his daughter.
Yeah.
Shooting at my work, people shot, in the office waiting for cops. Pray for us.
He said his daughter in there was saying, texting him at the time, pray for us. I say this, if you want to line up with terrorists and try to take God away, you're not on the right side.
Line up with terrorists. That's what the left is doing. We're lining up with terrorists. You sure about that, Elizabeth? What do I have here? Quote, more than 2,000 people on the FBI's terrorist watch list have not been allowed to get on planes in the U.S., but have been allowed to buy guns because the National Rifle Association and its allies in Congress, Republicans, have blocked legislation to close that loophole. They just did it again today. Today. Just a few days after this terrorist attack. They did it again. They're saying, no, we're going to allow people on the terrorist watch list to have guns. Who's lining up with terrorists again there, Elizabeth? Please tell me. I want to have that conversation. Let's have that conversation. And by the way, how little sense does that make when all the evidence points to the fact that these were Muslim fundamentalists who did this? So I do believe God is involved, and God is not on the side that you think God's on in this, okay? No, it's so sad. And obviously what they're saying is stop doing prayer and using prayer as an excuse to not fix it. Prayer isn't going to do Dickie McGeezacks, all right? You got to get on it. You have to actually do policies which attempt to fix the problem. You know, use your mind and implement shit in the real world, that crazy idea. They're using it as an excuse. Thoughts and prayers, thoughts and prayers, thoughts and prayers, thoughts and prayers. But don't ask me to actually do anything because I take a lot of money from the gun lobby and I got to keep them happy. So it doesn't matter how many people die in the U.S., guys, I gave you the numbers the other day. It's staggering. It is absolutely fucking staggering. Over 105,000 people have died in the U.S. from gun violence since just the Sandy Hook shooting, which was in 2013. I was doing the show at the time. From then until now, all the times I've sat here, 105,000 people, more than that, have died since then because of guns in the U.S. That includes everything. That's homicides, that's suicides, that's accidents. They don't have this in other modern nations. They have stricter gun laws and much fewer gun deaths. The Harvard meta-analysis, which I quote all the time, said very simply, more guns means more gun homicides. Crazy. See, the Republicans have this theory where they think more guns equals more peace. And they have a story to describe it. They say, well, I mean, think about it, guys. There's more good people in the world than bad people in the world. So if you give everybody a gun, well, I mean, then that means that the good people will keep the bad people in check because everybody has guns. Now, that's an interesting theory, and perhaps it could be true. But when you actually look at the data and you empirically determine whether or not that's true, it turns out that's false. But then notice how they flip that logic on its head when it comes to Iran and a nuclear weapon. That's a cute little trick too, right? Give a gun to everybody. More guns equals more peace. It's always better to have more weaponry. Should Iran have nukes?
Never. We should strike them for even thinking about it.
Well, what happened to more guns or more weapons equals more peace? What happened to that? They would say, well, that only means for rational actors. Exactly! That's what we've been saying all along! Have you listened? We've said we don't want paranoid schizophrenics, we don't want severely depressed people, we don't want people with bipolar disorder, we don't want people with multiple felonies on their record, we don't want people on the terrorist fucking watch list to get weapons. That's what we've been saying! Do a universal background check! But no, you'd rather berate people for pointing out the obvious. Oh, you're anti-prayer? You must be lining up with the terrorists, even though our side quite literally lined up with terrorists when we supported them getting weapons in a very specific and direct way. What a joke this is. Fox, you should be ashamed. Okay. Next. Rush Limbaugh. Oh boy, here we go again. Rush Limbaugh knows who to blame for the terrorism in San Bernardino. Let's listen.
An amazing illustration of where this country is. Just watching the news media since last night following this event. Folks, there's so many things here that are just rock solid simple that are being made complicated, obfuscated. It's absurd, and it is obscene to watch the efforts of the left cover this up. It's as though they think they did it. The people I'm talking about, the Democrats that are talking about this, the media that is talking about this and trying to pin blame on people that have nothing to do with it, it is almost as though the people on the left in this country feel guilty and are trying to transfer that guilt in order to protect their political agenda. Ladies and gentlemen, 14 people are dead, and a greater number are wounded. If you can't identify, if you can't admit that what happened here is an act of terror, then you're not trying. You don't need the motive. They've got the motive. They just don't want to announce the motive. Last night, watching the media on this was as frustrating as anything I've done recently. It is never more obvious to me than it is today that the left knows it is responsible for this. The left knows that it is as guilty as those pulling the trigger here, and they're doing everything they can to transfer that guilt and cover it up.
The left knows it is as guilty as the people who pulled the trigger. How can anybody say that? That's preposterous. How? You know what he's talking about, right? He's mad that President Obama dared to say, hey, let's wait for all the facts here before we come to any conclusions about terrorism or not. He's mad that President Obama legitimately was concerned about getting the facts before he said, yes, this was a terror attack. He's mad about that. And he said it right there. I wrote it down with the quotes. Quote, you don't need the motive. You don't need the motive. What does that even mean? No, but you know what it means. He means that he actually wants to blame Muslims, generally speaking. Because he's Rush Limbaugh and he's an obvious bigot. You don't need the motive. You don't need the motive when it comes to this case. President Obama and the left wanted to wait for the evidence? Ugh, gross. And then also, he makes it seem like there's some sort of gigantic conspiracy that the media is obviously going to hide it if it's some sort of Muslim terrorist. Dude, I don't know where you've been. Did they try to hide it when it was the situation in Paris? Everybody reported that they were Muslim. Every single person. 9/11, did anybody say, you know, that's not, well, I guess there were the truthers who said, but that's a mix of right-wingers and left-wingers. Alex Jones is a libertarian. He's got a lot of right-wing listeners who think that's an inside job. But the overwhelming majority of people realized, yes, that was Muslim fundamentalists. That was a case of Islamic terrorism. But notice what's really happening here is projection. Why do I say that? Well, we just covered the story the other day. Rush Limbaugh came out and was like, can we blame Planned Parenthood for the attack against them? I don't know. I'm just asking questions here.
I'm not saying they're responsible, but wait, hey, why can't we think about that and ponder about that out loud? So when it's a Christian terrorist, he's the one that goes into defense mode. Oh, no, don't ever look at my team, because my team are the good guys by definition, so I'm going to obfuscate, I'm going to deflect, and I'm going to try to cover it up and never mention Christian terrorist or far-right terrorist. It's all projection here. And by the way, if you think, you know, oh, the left is not going to acknowledge that this is Islamic terrorism, really? Go through my video history. We just did the segment before where I said they are Islamic terrorists, and I gave a more substantive breakdown of the problem with the ideology than Rush Limbaugh ever would. I pointed to literal contradictions in the Quran and said it's stupid if you believe it literally. So how can you do terrorism in the name of that when your book is ridiculous? And see, I'm giving an argument and a reason why, number one, it is Islamic terrorism, and number two, nobody should believe in it. Is Rush Limbaugh ever going to give an argument that's one-tenth as substantive as the one I just gave earlier as to why somebody shouldn't do it? No. But what is he going to do? You wait and see. We've seen him do it before. He'll do it again now. He is going to generalize and blame Muslims, broadly speaking, and he's going to contribute to the problem. Guys, it's totally legitimate and fair and just and right to go after Islamic fundamentalism and the ideology. I do it all the time. But to attack the problem in the way that Rush Limbaugh wants to, and that what he's begging for here, is the worst possible way. He literally says he wants, you don't need motive. When it's a Muslim, you don't need a motive. It's a Muslim. Guilty, 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 guilty. Again, it's projection, man. He's mad at Obama. He's mad at media outlets for waiting for the evidence before they pound the gavel. It's so pathetic, and he's the one that has the agenda. Everybody should recognize that.
I like how in the middle of that story, an eyelash got in my eye, and I was trying my best not to start blinking like a weirdo for the sake of YouTube, and I was able to successfully get through it, but now I got this fucking thing just plastered on my eyeball. Okay, I may have gotten it out, but now I have a red eye. Okay, next. Let's get to the heartbreaking story about the Kunduz bombing. I have Foreign Policy did a fantastic breakdown of this yesterday, so let me give you some of it here. Foreignpolicy.com has a heartbreaking feature story out on the U.S. bombing of the Doctors Without Borders Hospital in Kunduz, Afghanistan. And it's a real slap in the face and a reminder that what we do is real. It's easy to intellectualize this stuff, but when you see the results of, in this case, our government's actions, if you're an American, well, then it hits home. So here are some of the victims of the attack. Abdul Maqsood was 22 years old and worked as a patient information focal point. He was known to be a good cricket player. He began his career in the hospital as a daily worker and was proud when only a few months later he was recruited as a permanent member of the team. Maqsood showed dedication to his job and felt that working in the hospital was an honor. Then we have 22-year-old Abdul Nasir. He was a hospital cleaner. He was born in Kunduz province, where he'd been working for Doctors Without Borders since July 2013, and was described by those who knew him as a good person and incredibly hardworking. He was always ready to contribute and went above and beyond what the job demanded. He was very polite and known to assist both patients and their caretakers. He was often sitting or standing close to the door of the ICU, the intensive care unit, whenever someone entered, and he was faster than anyone else to help. We have 29-year-old Abdul Salam. He's described as very friendly and easygoing. He was a nurse in the operating room. He was one of the most passionate workers amongst the Kunduz Trauma Center staff, as well as being an experienced OT nurse. He also possessed a diploma in pharmacy. In his free time, he liked playing cricket and buzkashi, which is Afghanistan's national sport. During the heavy fighting in the week that led up to the attack, he allegedly barely slept and worked long hours to help his people and colleagues as much as he could. He was married, and he leaves behind two kids,
of which the youngest was only 40 days old. Dr. Aminullah Bajawari was a 32-year-old father and emergency room doctor. He worked the whole week before the attack and felt personally responsible for any patients that might not recover as a result of him not being there or him sleeping. Dr. Amin was someone that could always be relied on in the ER with extensive medical knowledge and a willingness to learn new things and a kind approach to his patients. It was his dream to become a neurosurgeon at a time when the lack of neurosurgeons in Afghanistan meant children were dying for lack of proper treatment. He was also a teacher at the Kunduz University and was highly respected by his students. Now, I'm going to give you one more here. It's a very long list, and I'll leave a link in the description box where you can go directly to the Doctors Without Borders website and look at their memorial page for all these people where they explain things like this about each and every casualty. But I'm going to give you one more here, and I'm warning you, this is graphic here. This is one of the pictures that foreignpolicy.com released yesterday. This is Binazar Mohammed Nazar. He was a security guard whose job was to protect jewelry shops and currency exchanges about a mile from his house. He lived in a poor village, and he wasn't paid very well. His family wanted him to move to Iran because they knew that there was fighting going on in their area between the Afghanistan government forces and the Taliban, and they didn't want to be caught in the crossfire. He decided, no, that he wanted to stay where he grew up, and he and his family stayed there. He was 43 years old, he had 3 kids, and he was shot by the government forces in the leg when he went to check on his stores. He felt responsible. His wife told him, don't go, there's fighting going on now. This was when the Taliban briefly came back into Kunduz and took it over. So he went anyway to do his job and to do his duty, and he was shot in the leg. He was shot in the thigh, to be exact. And it actually was, believe it or not, a Taliban guy who helped him get on some sort of vehicle, and then they took him to the hospital. And they did one surgery on his leg, and he needed one more. But after the first surgery, the signs were looking good. He still had functionality in his leg, looked like he was going to make a full recovery. Again, they wanted to keep him to do a second surgery, and as he was waiting for the second surgery and as he was in his room, that's when the U.S. airstrike hit, and he died. And then you have that powerful picture there that shows you that what we do is real. Now, a lot of people will argue, well, I mean, it was a total accident, so you know, you can't really draw anything away from this situation. You can't make moral judgments this way or that way. It was a total, total accident. Well, actually, if you follow this thing closely, the evidence is much more murky than that. It's a total gray area. So, allegedly, our allies in Afghanistan told us that they thought there were Taliban guys at Kunduz. There weren't Taliban guys at Kunduz. It is a hospital that treated everybody, no questions asked, which is the right thing to do, but there were no Taliban guys there. But the U.S. allegedly listened to the Afghan forces who told us to do that. We have cockpit recordings where they knew that it was a hospital, and they were like, are we really supposed to hit this? And then they hit it anyway, and this is the result right here. And what I fear is the same thing that we've seen in the case of funerals, where we know, because we have the evidence in those cases, that we attacked funerals when we knew there were women and children and civilians there to get one or two Taliban guys who were at the funeral of a Taliban operative. And I maintain that that's something that's quite different from just collateral damage. Collateral damage is you're trying to get the wrong guys, and then you end up getting some civilians totally by accident. This looks more like it's calculated. We know we might get a few of the right guys, but a lot of the wrong people are going to die, and they do it anyway. That's a grayer area, and that's not just collateral damage. There's not no moral culpability there. That's a tremendous problem. We've done it with funerals. We've done it with wedding processions that we thought were, the Taliban was involved. But again, think about it. So if it's a wedding procession, but you think the Taliban is involved, well, then, you know, what do you do? Do you know you're going to kill a bride?
right? You know you're going to kill some innocent people. Now, I'm sure that in some cases they were just totally confused and they didn't think it was a wedding in any way, shape, or form. But in some cases, they thought a Taliban wedding? Again, they do it for funerals in that circumstance. We know that 90% of our drone strikes kill the wrong people. This is internal government documents going back and forth with each other where they openly talk about this. We have people who worked the drones who said we called them fun-sized terrorists as we attacked children. We attacked children, and some of the drone operators said we had people who were doing bath salts and they were alcoholics, and they said, no, we want to kill the fun-sized terrorists, and we got to cut the grass. You know, we got to get them while they're young. So my point is, guys, you can't stop looking at it as we are the good guys by definition, they are the bad guys by definition, I don't want to know about it, I don't want to see it, I don't want to learn the facts, because in this case, your tax dollars are paying for it. So you have the ability and the responsibility to say, stop, not with my money, not in my name, and don't make us less safe, because this is going to create more radicals, no doubt about it. I mean, I think when you hear about the kid who was 40 days old and his dad died, who's that kid going to turn to? You know? And remember, our side in Afghanistan, they're not great people. We covered the story from the New York Times, the report where some of our soldiers were fired because they dared to speak out against the child sex slaves that people on our side in Afghanistan had, our Afghani allies. Because we aligned ourselves with warlords to fight against the Taliban. So, but they're both not good, and you're tolerating the grotesque and evil practices of one side to stand up against the grotesque and evil practices of the other side. But you totally overlook to the point where they fire people for saying, this guy's fucking children, he's raping kids. There were stories of our soldiers walking into their quarters and seeing that there was a kid handcuffed to one of the beds. Command said, shh. Don't say anything about it. They're on our side. But then you're not fighting for freedom and democracy. You're fighting to preserve a system of sex slavery as long as our side does it? That's insanity. That's not morality. So we must condemn this. We must try to stop this military-industrial complex and this rampant and wanton imperialism, which is a problem. It's not as simple as we're the good guys, they're the bad guys. Actions matter. Killing civilians is horrific and grotesque when they do it. It's horrific and grotesque when we do it. And we need to try to stop it. Quick break, and then when we come back, I got a bunch of stuff still to get to. I got Sarah Palin, Jon Stewart, Ben Carson, and good googly moogly, what are parents more afraid of? Movies with sex or movies with violence? All right, we'll talk about all that and much more. Stay right there, guys.
If I stay with you, girl.
mouth of a bitch.
All right, we're back, guys. We are back. We are back. I can't stop thinking about it. I mean, now it's what? So we had last week it was the Christian terror attack on Planned Parenthood. Now it looks like we have a Muslim terrorist attack in San Bernardino. I mean, we're talking about a situation where fundamentalist religious beliefs and ideas are giving people a rationalization, a framework wherein not only are they permitting themselves to do violence, they think it's the most moral thing to do. And in every case, they give some, you know, examples of they think this is a secular grievance that could go hand in hand with it. But they never make any sense. So, like, when the Christian terrorists said, no more baby parts. Yeah, but the problem with that is they weren't selling baby parts for profit. What they were doing is donating fetal tissue to medical researchers who then try to cure diseases. Because, you know, they're pro-life, unlike you. So your rationale is not correct. It's not correct on that point. It's not correct on the religiosity front, because your religion is bullshit. So when you say, Jesus is going to forgive me no matter what, so I can do whatever I want, that's not true. Jesus ain't coming. Okay, now in this case with the Muslim fundamentalists, the Islamic terrorists, they had mentioned something about to a coworker about Israel, you're never going to see Israel, and the Jews have taken over our land or whatever. Okay, so that's a concern for you. How does it make it better by murdering civilians who help people with disabilities who ain't got shit to do with that? That doesn't make it better in any way, shape, or form. If anything, if that's really a concern for you, it'll make it worse. Because the U.S. is only going to crack down more. We're only going to do more interventions and build more military bases. And you don't think that the right wing is going to do an irrational crackdown on innocent Muslims and generalize about all Muslims? So there's no logic to your actions. Even if you say, as Osama bin Laden did, hey, the U.S. sanctions in Iraq that killed 1.5 million people, that's one of the things I'm mad about. I mean, how does it make it better to attack other innocent civilians? You're, in essence, doing the same thing that you're accusing the other side of being bad people for doing. And then, naturally, the whatever religious justifications they give are also bullshit, because we know that their framework for believing that in Christianity, in Islam, in any other religion, Hinduism, for example, those justifications are not true. They're not true. So in India, for example, they kill Muslims. They've done that. They've lynched them recently. There's been a few examples of this because they thought that the person ate beef. But they don't believe in your bullshit fairy tale myths. So if they want to eat it, they can eat it. And by the way, in the case that they actually didn't eat it, so it was more of a witch hunt. But even if they did eat it, you fucking lynch them for that. So you're saying beef is more important than Muslims. A cow's life is more important than the life of a Muslim. Well, that belief system is simply wrong. You're incorrect in believing, you know, whatever doctrine it is that pointed you in that direction. In the case of these Muslim terrorists, you're wrong in believing that killing the infidels is justified and right, because that's in a book that has a doctrine of contradictory nonsense and talks about things like Muhammad flying on a winged donkey and there's a bright yellow cow. How can anybody look at this and say, nailed it, sign me up for that one, because that one looks scientific and factual? That's not true. That's not correct. With the Christian terrorists, same thing. You know, they said the Christian terrorist for Planned Parenthood was obsessed with end times happening. But it's not happening. If you believe that, it's simply untrue. So at the end of the day, you have people doing violence. They're super convinced that they're right, but in reality, they are the most wrong. They are embarrassingly wrong, and they act in the most immoral way, as they're convinced that they're acting in the most moral way. It's beyond grotesque. I'm telling you, man. Look, you gotta. I'm trying my best to create more secular people. Just so that they don't, I don't want people believing fairy tales. And this isn't to generalize about all Muslims, all Christians, all Hindus, all whatever, because the overwhelming majority of all of these different religions are people who are just people who are trying to get by and do right by their families and make a living and stuff like that. So in no way is this a generalization. What I'm arguing against is the fundamental belief in Scripture and in the holy books, because it's not true and it's potentially very, very dangerous. Okay. Let me go to Sarah Palin here. I do have a clip for this. Yeah, I have to. Because I can't do the gosh golly gee impression the entire time. Yeah. Sarah Palin is going to weigh in with her foreign policy expertise here. I don't know if you guys heard, she could see Russia from her house. Got to know a lot about foreign policy then, am I right? So Sarah, tell us your ISIS plan.
What would you do to defeat ISIS? You have to quit being this namby-pamby kind of milquetoast, let's discuss things with them, let's reach out and try to understand them. No, they're the enemy. They're evil. Do you think we should declare war? America should be that leader saying it is time to declare war on that enemy and to first to recognize who the enemy is.
What scares many Americans right now is that Hillary Clinton is saying we are not at war with Islam.
So naive. It's a scary kind of naive that anyone would believe that the radical Islamic movement, jihad, that it can be understood and leading to some kind of embracing of it. No, we have to be honest about it. It has to be stopped.
Oh, there's your answer. Why didn't I think of that? It has to be stopped. See, President Obama and the Democrats, Hillary Clinton, usually they all get in a room and they say, are we for ISIS existing still? Let me see a show of hands. Anybody? Anybody? Bueller? Are we against them? I can't decide. I mean, that last beheading video seemed kind of intriguing in the way they do it. Aren't they just adorbs sometimes? Everybody wants to stop them. The question is how you do that. That's where there's debate and disagreement, and there are good answers there. There are bad answers there. Nobody has the perfect answers, but intellectuals need to try to get to some sort of fruitful, rational reaction here. But Sarah Palin was like, well, now what you need to do, I have the answer. We got to stop doing the mamby-pamby kind of milquetoast. That's a literal quote. Mamby-pamby kind of milquetoast. What are you saying? Are you reading me a fucking nursery rhyme or something? It's like she's got a Dr. Seuss book in front of her. Green eggs and ham and mamby-pamby kind of milquetoast. And then she goes on to say, quote, don't try to understand them. Don't try to understand them. Evil. They're evil. Sarah, both can be true. We can all acknowledge and admit and agree that that's pretty fucking evil. Those actions are evil. But then also try to understand exactly why they're doing it. And oftentimes, it's a mix of things. So one thing is deep, deep religious indoctrination and brainwashing and believing a fundamentalist interpretation of Islam. And then other parts of it, for many of the people in these different groups, are legit concerns about politics and extreme poverty and having no hope or opportunity, and they have, you know, nationalistic grievances and whatnot. Like, for example, the Ba'athists, Saddam's former generals, Ba'athists, who are basically secular socialist Sunnis, they teamed up with ISIS. Why did they team up with ISIS and actually give them a lot of territorial success? Well, they did it because the Shiites came into power in Iraq and started repressing the Sunnis. So they made that was in allegiance out of necessity, where they thought, we got to stop the oppression from the Shiites, so we're going to team up with these also shitty people who are super religious and just use them to try to ride our way back to power. So it's a complex situation, and there's multiple different answers, and it depends on which individuals you're talking about. But Sarah Palin says, quote, don't try to understand them. To fight them, you can't be the mamby-pamby kind of milk toast. I don't know what that means. What are you saying? You're just using word salad. There's sounds coming out of your mouth, but there's no meaning connected to them. And also think about her response to what the interviewer said there. The interviewer said, Hillary says we aren't at war with Islam. Now, specifically, Hillary was struggling with saying radical Islam because she did not want to demonize our allies in the region who are helping us fight ISIS. Now, I disagree with her. You should say radical Islam because that's what it is. It's like saying fundamentalist Islam. You're not blaming all Muslims. You're just pointing out the problem for what it is. But the way the interviewer said it was, Hillary says we aren't at war with Islam. And what was Sarah Palin's response? That's bad, that she should say we're at war with Islam. Sarah was not responding to radical Islam. She was responding to Islam. See, this is the problem. This is one of the problems, is the generalized black and white thinking on the right from bigots on the right who do want to be in a clash of civilizations, who do want to be in an us versus them thing. And when they say us versus them, they don't mean the world versus ISIS or jihadists. They do mean us, the West, versus Muslims in general. And that's why a lot of people on the right quite literally don't know the difference between Sunni and Shiite. They don't know that Iran, the Shia nation, is fighting ISIS. They don't know that Kurds, who are Sunnis, are fighting ISIS. And ISIS are, of course, radical Sunnis. They're Salafists. They don't know the difference, because to them it's, Muslim! Bad! Muslim bad! Don't be the mamby-pamby kind of milquetoast something! But Sarah, and this is the other thing, it doesn't matter what Obama does. They're always going to say that. They're always going to say, weak, weak, mamby-pamby milquetoast. But what is Obama doing? Obama has dropped thousands of bombs on ISIS. Thousands of bombs. It's what's happening right now in Syria. So he's doing one of the things that you say you want, and in my opinion, he hasn't done it accurately or good enough. I mean, if the drone war is any indication, 90% of the time we get the wrong people. According to them, they say that internally. So he, in my opinion, that might be too hawkish of a plan. But she's caricaturing him as not hawkish enough. And in order to do that, she has to disregard the facts. And that comes like second nature to Sarah Palin, because we're talking about facts. She's clueless on that. Okay. Next. John Stewart is back in the news. I'm so happy to be discussing John Stewart. He's a good dude, man. I say it like he's dead. I'm talking, of course, about him on The Daily Show and how good he was at that job. Yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm actually not going to say it on air. I'm going to do it later, a Twitter poll that I just thought of. If I ruin it, 8 of you will do the poll before me, so I'm not going to say it. All right. John Stewart went to Capitol Hill because the original legislation to give health care to the 9/11 first responders is expiring. Now, everybody expected a new bill to pass. But naturally, Congress fucked it up, and they cut the spending in the bill, and they're using it for sleazy, corrupt tricks, and it didn't even get out of committee. We covered this story not too long ago. So Mitch McConnell, just to give one example here of how screwed up this process has become, he's trying to use this bill as a giveaway to oil companies. It doesn't get much lower than that. A bill to give health care and to take care of the first responders on 9/11, the heroes. He's like, yeah, I might as well put my oil company giveaway on this because it's going to be viewed as a must-pass, so I might as well put corrupt, sleazy shit in there so I can get it through. These guys are, I mean, they're the lowest of the low, man. They're scum. They're not good people. Mitch McConnell, you're a bad person. I want you to know that, okay? And it's the way the problem also fundamentally is the system, don't get me wrong, but Mitch McConnell's a bad guy on top of the corrupt and disgusting and rotting system. So listen to John Stewart call out McConnell here, and then I want to come back and give you a follow-up to this.
People here who are reporters, because I cannot bring heroism or integrity to this process. I can only bring cameras and hopefully a sense of public shame. So this is what I ask to all the reporters here and the people with the cameras. I ask you to go to Senator Mitch McConnell's office and ask him personally, in 2000, you sponsored the Nuclear Energy Permanent Health Care Bill. You made a campaign commercial touting your support for that bill. That bill has to date cost $11 billion. Everyone here is asking for something that is $4.6 billion. How in good conscience can you deny them the very thing that you have proudly brought to the people of your state?
That is a fantastic point. And this is something Mitch McConnell does with Obamacare, too. He said in the debates when he was running for re-election that he's against Obamacare, but he's for Connect. What's Connect? The Medicare system they have in Kentucky. That's Obamacare, because that was expanded under Obamacare. The Medicaid expansion is part of Obamacare. So he was able to say, I'm against Obamacare, but I'm for Obamacare. He does this all the time. He wants to repeal it at the federal level, but then keep the good parts for his people in Kentucky. So he speaks out of both sides of his mouth. He's a bad dude. John Stewart's saying it right here. Oh, really? Why is it that the people in your state, under certain circumstances, you're fine with giving them health care forever, in the case he laid out with this bill, for the 9/11 first responders, you won't fund their health care even when it costs half of what it costs for the people in your state? So you ready for this? Here's the follow-up. It worked. Yet again, John Stewart was the reason why the first health care bill for the responders got through. So I guess there was a sunset provision on it, so it's expiring, and they were having trouble passing it. And then he went to Capitol Hill, chastised them. It worked again. Quote, McConnell met with some 9/11 responders and advocates not long after Stewart arrived and pledged to include the legislation in the upcoming omnibus spending bill that must pass next week to keep the government funded. One of the responders, John Feel, said in an afternoon rally with Stewart, he has guaranteed us a permanent health care program. He has guaranteed us $4.6 billion on the Victims Compensation Fund. There you have it. John Stewart comes through in the clutch again. So, you know what's sad? And he would admit this too. It's sad that he has to do it and that a comedian is the moral compass of the United States of America. And who do we blame here other than the obvious, which is Congress and how corrupt they are? You blame the media because the media should have been on top of this from day one. We covered on our show here, we covered this issue a while ago. How many times was it covered in the mainstream? How many times did CNN cover it? How many times did the nightly news shows cover it? Fox News, MSNBC, you on top of that? No, of course not. Because they're chasing ratings and they're trying to get that cheap bump, the cheap high in ratings, like CNN does where they abuse the breaking news banner, where they literally put stuff like, breaking news, the Titanic sank 102 years ago today. That's literal. They did it. We covered the story on the show when it happened. So they're like a chicken with its head cut off. They don't know what the fuck they're doing. They're trying to get ratings by any means necessary. They're desperate. And they forget that perhaps if you do quality content that's actually entertaining but educational for people, then they'll watch. Maybe if you covered the shit that people actually care about, like the healthcare for the 9/11 first responders, you'll get some eyeballs and it won't be a cheap bump in the ratings. It'll be people watching because they're actually interested and you're saying things that matter. But I know that won't happen, and I'm crazy for even bringing it up. We need a guy like John Stewart to remind us what really counts and what really matters. Okay. Now let's go to Ben Carson. Lighten it up here. Except it's not really lightening it up, because he
He might. He has a chance to be our next president. Ben Carson gave a speech at the Republican Jewish Coalition, and he may not know how to say Hamas.
But beyond the territorial challenge, a much bigger challenge exists. The challenge is the split between Fatah and Hamas. Fatah and Hamas operate in a constant state of conflict. Fatah rules the West Bank, Hamas rules the Gaza Strip. These two groups are constantly arresting each other's political foes in their respective territories. They reportedly torture each other's cooperatives and are continually vying for the support of the Palestinian people. Part of the problem, of course, is that Fatah is largely a secular political movement, while Hamas is a deeply religious Islamic political movement.
Tell me more about Hamas. Now, all the headlines on this are he's calling it hummus. I think my interpretation of it is a little more kind. I see like a middle ground here. He's not saying Hamas, but he's not saying hummus. He's saying Hamas. So he starts out with the H-A, but then he doesn't do M-A-S. He does M-U-S. Hamas. Either way, the point that the headlines are hinting at is true. So they're hinting at the fact that he doesn't know dick about dick. Okay? He's a twat waffle on the national stage. That's what they're getting at. And they're right. He doesn't. He doesn't know anything. Okay? And it's not just him, actually, to be fair to him. Virtually all the people on the stage at the Republican debates don't know anything. They don't know anything. You had Donald Trump, who did an interview with Hugh Hewitt, conservative radio host, and Hugh Hewitt kind of pushed him a little bit on Hezbollah and Hamas. He's like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know about it. I'll learn about it, but I don't know. Now, to be fair to Trump in that case, I don't blame him for not knowing, like, the leadership of Hezbollah. I don't blame him for not knowing the leadership of different groups. But you should know who Hamas is. You should know who Hezbollah is if you're running to be president of the United States of America. I'm not okay with the fact that you might have to sit down with a staffer and they explain to you very basic things about groups that are any political junkie knows a decent amount about. So, but Trump doesn't know dick about it. Carson doesn't know dick about it. And these guys, one, two. And wait, oh, you think Ted Cruz is oh so well versed in this stuff? I mean, just once, like, it would kind of be a gotcha question, but not really. But I want somebody in the media to go up to these guys and say, tell me whether Saddam Hussein was Sunni or Shia. You're giving them a 50-50 shot. Let's go even more basic. Tell me if the government of Iran are allies with ISIS or they're fighting ISIS. They wouldn't be able to answer. They wouldn't be able to answer, man. They don't know. They don't fucking know. But and people will say, oh, you did a gotcha question. It's only a gotcha question if you have gotcha beliefs. So, in other words, you don't know. So, is it a gotcha question? No, you didn't do your fucking homework. You're running for president. You gotta know that. You gotta fucking know that. So, bottom line is, I don't think he said hummus. I'm gonna go with hummus, a mix between hummus and Hamas. But he doesn't know anything. So, that point stands. You should be concerned that he's anywhere near the top of the Republican field. All right, next. I got 6 minutes left and two more stories. All right, so we have some fascinating military news to discuss today. Mediaite reports, quote, there are various combat roles that for years women have been restricted from fulfilling in the U.S. military. The 1994 combat exclusion policy has kept female soldiers from being infantry, artillery, and combat engineers. But that's about to change. Defense Secretary Ash Carter announced today that all combat positions will now be open to women. So according to the New York Times, units would likely remain largely male, and there would be no quotas or perception thereof. So, here's the most important part. They have to meet the standards, guys.
So portraying this as some sort of weakening of our military and, oh, it's all political correctness and that garbage, that is total bullshit. It's not true. And lest you think women are incapable of being involved in direct combat roles, tell that to the Kurdish PKK female fighters who are kicking the ass of ISIS. This is literal. People don't know about this. This is a story that should have been much bigger than it was. The Kurds have some all-female forces. And they absolutely owned ISIS not that long ago. We covered it on the show. Okay. They certainly can do it. That doesn't mean you let in every woman ever. That doesn't mean you let in every guy ever. There are standards to get into the military and to be involved in these things, as there should be. But should you, as a blanket rule, reject all women from certain positions because you feel like you think that's what you should do? No. That's bullshit. That's unscientific. That doesn't make sense. And there is an element of sexism in that, whether or not you want to acknowledge that. So as long as you keep the standards high, as long as you don't have any goofy actual PC things like quotas, it makes perfect sense, and I totally support it. Okay. And finally, there's a new survey that's been released on the issue of parenting, and it has some weird takeaways that are worthy of further comment. So the Parents Ratings Advisory Study, which is what it's called, found that 80% of American parents are worried about sex scenes in movies, 72% are worried about drug use, and just 64% are worried about graphic violence. Now stop and think about that. It hit me that this, what we're dealing with here, is out-and-out cultural brainwashing, for lack of better terms. Because there's nothing innate about, like, you know, hey, don't let the kids see drug use or sex scenes in movies, but let them see violence. No, no. We've just gone down that path as a society. So we don't think twice if there's an action movie that involves violence. It's the most normal thing ever. You know, hey, Rambo, hey, Rocky. Hey, apparently I'm picking on Sylvester Stallone here. But whatever it is, hey, a Liam Neeson movie, the 83-year-old dude who kicks everybody's ass. Wonderful. And he gets the girl, too. Yay. So we just went down that road as a society, and therefore we fewer people worry about it just because we're used to it. But more people are worried about the things that, in my opinion, are way more benign. Now, drug use is a complicated one because, you know, you don't want people to become addicted, and some percentage do. Most are moderate users. But I understand not wanting to promote it in front of kids. But, like, sex scenes, for example, I mean, fuck, if the kid's too young to understand it, they're too young to understand it. Or if they get to the age where they want to experiment, well, for fuck's sake, they're going to do it anyway, so you might as well teach them about it, you do education, and not censor it from movies. It's the most natural part of life outside of, like, breathing and eating. You're like, no, censor that, but allow people to fuck people up, shoot them in the face, cut off their head, and do every other violent thing under the sun. I don't like the double standard. I think it's weird, and I think we're... Guys, in entertainment, I like almost no lines. You know, if it's a movie, it's a movie. It's entertainment. Free-for-all, man. You know, drug use, sex, violence, it's entertainment, it's not real life, so we should allow it all, and we shouldn't have these weird emotional double standards where violence is totally cool, but sex and drugs, ew, gross, wrong. All right, guys, I'm out of time. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday. Mwah, peace.